John chapter 20, Jesus says to Thomas, blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. And that's all of us, right? People who have not physically seen Jesus and yet believe in Jesus because of the testimony of those who did see Jesus. So let's think a little bit about this 20th chapter of John. We're going to start by actually listening to this quote from Merrill Tinney. It says, the 20th chapter of John is the climax of the book. The Johannine account of the resurrection is remarkable for several reasons. It is compact and yet tells the essential story in a surprisingly short compass. It is historical, for it connects spiritual meaning with events in space and time, and presents evidence which asserts the reality of the supernatural without employing the extravagant tales of apocryphal legend. It is personal and interprets the resurrection as it affected the intimate lives of certain of Jesus' disciples. And it is coherent with the rest of the gospel, for it summarizes by illustration the various effects of belief and brings that belief to its highest expression. So I think that's a pretty good summary of what we're about to think about in this 20th chapter. Let's read the text, John chapter 20, beginning with verse 1. Now, the first day of the week, this is the first day of the week after Jesus has been crucified on the Friday, which would have been Passover, and then you've got, it's the Sabbath day, Saturday, when everyone rested, and here we are on Sunday, the first day of the week. Mary Magdalene went to the tomb early while it was still dark and saw that the stone had been taken away from the tomb. And then she ran and came to Simon Peter and to the other disciple whom Jesus loved and said to them, they have taken away the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they have laid him. Peter, therefore, went out, and the other disciple, and were going to the tomb. So they both ran together, and the other disciple outran Peter and came to the tomb first. That's not nice of John to brag about being faster than Peter, is it? Right there. The other disciple beat him in the race. Then verse 6, then Simon Peter came, following him, and went into the tomb, and he saw the linen cloths lying there, and the handkerchief that had been around his head, not lying with the linen cloths, but folded together in a place by itself. And then the other disciple, who came to the tomb first, went in also, and he saw and believed. For as yet they did not know the scripture that he must rise again from the dead. And then the disciples went away again to their own homes. But Mary stood outside by the tomb, weeping. And as she wept, she stooped down and looked into the tomb. And she saw two angels in white sitting, one at the head, the other at the feet, where the body of Jesus had lain. And then they said to her, woman, why are you weeping? And she said to them, because they have taken away my Lord, and I do not know where they have laid him. Now when she had said this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there. But she did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to her, woman, why are you weeping? Whom are you seeking? And she, supposing him to be the gardener, said to him, sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have laid him, and I will take him away. Jesus said to her, Mary. And she turned and said to him, Rabboni, which is to say, teacher. Jesus said to her, do not cling to me, for I have not yet ascended to my Father. But go to my brethren and say to them, I am ascending to my Father and your Father and to my God and your God. Mary Magdalene came and told the disciples that she had seen the Lord and that he had spoken these things to her. Then the same day at evening, being the first day of the week, when the doors were shut where the disciples were assembled for fear of the Jews, Jesus came and stood in the midst and said to them, peace be with you. And when he had said this, he showed them his hands and his side. And then the disciples were glad when they saw the Lord. So Jesus said to them again, peace to you. And as the Father has sent me, I also send you. And when he had said this, he breathed on them and said to them, receive the Holy Spirit. If you forgive the sins of any, they are forgiven them. If you retain the sins of any, they are retained. Now Thomas, called the twin, one of the 12, was not with them when Jesus came. The other disciples therefore said to him, "We have seen the Lord." So he said to them, "Unless I see in his hands the print of the nails, and put my finger into the print of the nails, and put my hand into his side, I will not believe." And after 8 days, his disciples were again inside, and Thomas with them. And Jesus came, the doors being shut, and stood in the midst, and said, "Peace to you." And then he said to Thomas, "Reach your finger here, and look at my hands. And reach your hand here, and put it into my side. Do not be unbelieving, but believing." And Thomas answered and said to him, "My Lord and my God." Jesus said to him, "Thomas, because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." And truly Jesus did many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written, that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing, you may have life in his name. Okay. So that's John chapter 20. That's the text. That's John's account of the resurrection chapter. So, according to John chapter 20, let's just walk our way back through this so that we can get an idea as to what this means for us. I don't really actually think this is a super difficult chapter. Maybe a couple difficult phrases here and there. But I think the basic story is pretty simple. It's just an account of eyewitness testimony as to the coming upon the empty tomb and then the sighting of Jesus by several different disciples. So according to John chapter 20 verse 1, who comes to the tomb early on the first day of the week? And what does she think happened to Jesus? Mary Magdalene, and she just, he's not there, and later when she sees the gardener, she thinks maybe you've taken him away. Do you feel like she was inclined by that, you know, doubt or by those automatic assumptions? Was she inclined to believe in the resurrection at that point? I would say not, right? Her first response is, well, somebody must have taken him away. I mean, if you came upon a grave and you had been to the burial 3 days before and then all of a sudden someone has dug up the grave and everything is missing, would your first response be, well, they must have resurrected? No, we would think, who in the world did this? Why would someone have taken the body out of this grave? Who did this? And that's her automatic response, which is very believable. That's why this is a very honest telling of the first reaction is the natural reaction, which is somebody must have taken the body. So we keep on walking through here, and it is interesting though that even though that is her first impulse, she still, there's a lot of love for Mary to have come when she did. And I think Barclay expresses that well in his commentary. It says, Mary had sinned much and she loved much. Jesus' friends could not come to the tomb on the Sabbath. You know, we ask, well, why didn't they come on the Sabbath day to come visit the tomb? They couldn't come because to make that journey would have been to break the law. Sabbath is, of course, our Saturday, so this would have been on Sunday morning that Mary came to the tomb. She came very early. The word that's used in the Greek is proi, which was the technical word for the last of the four watches into which the night was divided. That's the word that John uses. And that watch would have been between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m. So Mary's up early to come see. That's about as early as you could get there to come see the Lord. So it was still gray dark. It's noted that when Mary came, because she could no longer stay away. So she comes early in the morning on Sunday morning to come and see Jesus. So who else comes to investigate? And what do they discover at the tomb scene? What are some of the discoveries here? Important little details, I think, when we try to present evidence to others that as to the resurrection of Jesus. Who else comes? Dwayne.
It was Peter and another disciple, and you're saying that the other text proved out that's One of the important details, you know, is the cloth that was covering his face had been folded in place. So, you know, you sit there and you think about that. If someone had taken the body, yeah, they're probably not going to take all of the linens and everything off, and they're certainly not going to just fold it and, you know, put it in their neat orderly place.
Right. Right. And so the term folded there is a very interesting term, an important detail that John uses, because you're right. If somebody comes and robs your house, they don't fold everything and put everything neatly back that they messed up. They're trying to get in and get out as quick as possible. And so that's an important detail, that if the body was stolen by somebody and they didn't want to get caught, they would have grabbed that body, not taken the time to unwrap the body. And if they did, they would have just thrown it down and taken off. And so those little details are just small evidences that Peter and John, as they investigate and look at that, they note that makes this kind of a unique, if this is a grave robbery, this is a very unique grave robbery, because these robbers were very careful in how they handled the body. So they come to investigate. That's what they find. The tomb is empty, first of all, of the body, not empty of the clothes that were wrapped around the body. So there's a few details that refute various critics. There's a lot of, if you don't believe in the resurrection, right, you have to come up with theories. You have to come up with theories for, well, why was the tomb empty then? And so we've got all kinds of anti-resurrection theories. Empty tomb theories. Well, Jesus maybe just fainted on the cross, right, and then he just woke back up and he just kind of pushed that tomb open after having been, you know, major holes in his body, after being pierced in his side. I guess, Steve, you probably would have felt like moving a huge stone the day after your knee surgery, right? Just busting out of there and just kind of running around, right? Because that's how we feel after we've been cut open, right, the next day. Just feel like Superman, don't you? No, you don't, right? But that's kind of one of the ideas, the swoon theory. The other ideas are just grave robbery. So either the disciples came and stole the body, or the enemies of Jesus came and stole the body. Why they would want to steal the body is kind of interesting, right? They wanted the body to stay there. They did not want a risen Jesus. That's the last thing they wanted. And then there's all kinds of other ideas. Maybe they misidentified the body. Well, that couldn't have happened. It was a brand new tomb. Nobody else was in it. Sometimes in tombs, there's multiple people buried in tombs because tombs were expensive. Brand new tomb. He's the only one there. And so there's all kinds of theories. This refutes a few of those, this text. If the women had stolen the body of Jesus, why would they bother coming to the tomb on Sunday morning? If they already had the body, they would know the body wasn't there. So you can't really say the women came and stole the body. It's also, you know, I don't know how much Jesus weighed. The Bible doesn't tell us that, but, you know, you're talking, I'm just going to throw a number out there. Let's say, you know, 160 to 200 pounds. In my mind, Jesus is a little, you know, he's a thin guy. But that's, I mean, how many women, we could try this. How many women would it take to carry me out of here? Anybody want to volunteer? You don't want to volunteer to do that because I don't want to hurt you. But how do they get the body to wherever they took it? Why would they ask that question? If the disciples stole the body and they knew where it was, why did Peter and John, right, I'm assuming that this is John because he's always referring to himself as the disciple Jesus loved, or the other disciple, never calls himself by name in his text, but why would they run to the tomb? Oh, Mary says the tomb is empty. Let's run. Let's pretend to fake out Mary, even though we know that we stole it last night. Let's run to the tomb and act real excited. Were they just acting? Well, they ran to the tomb because they didn't know where the body was. They didn't know it was empty. They didn't steal the body. That's why they went there to go investigate it. And so that's an important detail. And if grave robbers and enemies stole the body, then why take the time to remove and neatly fold the grave clothes? Just don't do that. That's not normal, at least. So there's a few theories that by these little details are refuted and disputed. And here's the thing, when you're talking to unbelievers, for me, this is just, the resurrection of Jesus is just the one miracle I really can't find another alternative explanation for. I can't explain it away. The empty tomb, you can try to come up with every false theory you want to, but it just doesn't make nearly as much sense as Jesus must have been raised from the dead. And these passages, not just here, but you can look at Matthew, Mark, Luke as well. Other details in those passages help refute nearly every theory that somebody could throw out there about Jesus and his resurrection. Now, question three, who stays near the tomb and what happens while she's there? So Peter and John go back to their homes. Who stays?
Mary's there.
What is she doing? She's looked into the tomb. She sees two angels. She's weeping. Is your vision always clear when you're weeping, by the way? A little blurry sometimes. You're weeping. You're emotional. You're not always thinking quite clearly. And what does she find out?
Right.
The angels ask her a question. Why are you weeping? And then Jesus asks her a question, and she assumes Jesus is the gardener. Right?
Jesus' form must have changed before she didn't recognize him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, again, to me, it's just more evidence that she really wasn't expecting a risen Jesus. There's a few, you could say, I don't know what his form looked like. I know that it was clear enough that he could say, put your hand in my side and put your finger in the hole. So I know that. But I also know she's been crying and weeping, so she may not even be looking up. She may be, when people are crying, they don't always want to look you in the eye. Right? Because they're ashamed, they're humbled. But Jesus reveals himself to her, and she finally realizes it's him. So what'd she do with that information? Who's the first evangelist? It's Mary Magdalene. Well, who's the first one to say Jesus is risen? Mary Magdalene. She goes back to the... No, she's not called an evangelist, so let's just make that clear before anybody jumps out of their seat. But who's the first one to tell people about Jesus? And he's risen. It's her. It's her. She goes back to the disciples and says, I've seen the Lord. So this is further information. Before it was just, I've seen the empty tomb. Peter and John come. Yeah, the tomb is empty. Now she goes back and says, I've seen the Lord. So according to Luke's account, how do the disciples first respond to this information? Especially look at Luke 24, 10 and 11.
They didn't believe,
right? Luke 24, verse 10 says, Mary Magdalene, other women came and tell the apostles. There's other women mentioned in this scene in the other gospels. Verse 11 says, their words seemed to them like idle tales or like nonsense, and they did not believe them. And so again, the Gospels are very honest. The natural reaction for the people who are with Jesus for 3 years is, that doesn't happen. You know, and we saw Jesus do some pretty incredible things, but you're telling me that Jesus is walking around, talking, alive. You've seen him alive. I don't believe this. I think you're just emotional. Right? What would you think if your spouse who had lost someone that they loved came up to you 3 days later and said, I saw them walking around? And be kind of yours, like, I know you're grieving, I know you're having, but you're losing it a little bit here, right? You're a little too emotional about this. And so you're talking nonsense, and that's their first response. I think that initial response is very important, because it makes this whole thing a lot more believable. They didn't want to just all of a sudden write a resurrection story to convince people. They're letting you know, I doubted this at first. I had a hard time with this. Sarah.
Just backtracking a little bit, the verse that stands out to me is in 16 when he speaks to her. Because whether she was looking at him or not, she didn't recognize him or not, there's something about the way that he said remain, that is the moment when she recognized him. So that tells me that they had a very close relationship for her to recognize his voice saying her name. Mm-hmm. And that's the one that popped out at me because, you know, she knew his voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. They have a close relationship and she recognizes it, right? All of a sudden, it's, teacher, I can hear your voice now and how you say my name. So, good point. So they don't really believe at first. Well, when does Jesus make his first appearance to the disciples? When you read John chapter 20? Same day, just later that evening, okay? Mary was there early in the morning. It was still dark in the morning. Jesus comes later that evening to come and meet with them. By the way, how are they acting?
Hiding.
They're hiding. Yeah, the disciples are in hiding. They just killed our leader 3 days ago. And now that the Sabbath has passed, maybe they're going to come after his disciples now. So they're in a closed room. And for fear of the Jews, it says they're hiding. So what does Jesus allow them to see?
The hands, right?
Yeah, but I'm going to show you the print of the nails. I'm going to show you the hole that's in my side. So he allows examination. And I think that's important. You know, people are skeptical. And sometimes, oh, why are you skeptical of this? It's natural to be skeptical. It's okay to doubt. It's natural. But let's also realize that there is evidence. And you need to be willing to listen to the evidence that gets presented. Jesus was willing to show evidence for the fact that he had died. It really was him. And they were willing to accept that evidence. So what's their response here?
They were glad.
Yeah, and that should be our response. Wow, Jesus is risen. There is hope. There is hope beyond death. And Jesus proves that to them right here. So they're glad when they saw the Lord. Who's missing, though? Somebody's not here.
Thomas.
What lessons can we learn from Thomas? I've got a sermon called What Thomas Missed When He Didn't Show Up to the Assembly, right? So I'll let you guys preach the mini version of that. What he missed because he wasn't there.
Well, because he wasn't there, essentially, he's the last one essentially to believe that he is resurrected. Now, he too watched Jesus die. And so I think we're really quick to, we even give him that label, you know, Doubting Thomas, mm-hmm. Thomas the Doubter, mm-hmm. which is kind of ironic, just on a side note, in John 11:16, where he says to Jesus, no, we'll go down to Jerusalem at the risk of death, yet we don't call him Thomas the Brave. You know, so it's kind of interesting that we give him this label when in reality he wasn't there with the disciples when Jesus came, as we read in verse 24, perhaps because Thomas was so emotionally distraught that he wanted to be by himself. He wanted to be alone. Mm-hmm. Now, I think there's a time and place when we need to be alone sometimes, but, you know, there's also something to be said about being assembled with each other. You know, there are good things that can work with that. And sometimes, you know, we can cut ourselves off from the people around us so much to the point that we're not always thinking as clearly. We don't see things as accurately as we need to.
Mm-hmm. It's a good point to make that there was certainly, you would have been emotionally distraught over all of these events. This is a lot that's happened in a week, basically, where Jesus has declared that I'm going to die. We've gone through the betrayal. One of their best friends that they spent all this time with has betrayed Jesus. They've heard about the trials in the middle of the night, which were really sham trials, and the false accusations. They've seen Jesus die, and you're right. All the disciples have been through a lot. They're just kind of at this point. Just only 3 days later, where are we now? What do we do now? Jesus is gone, and so right, different people would handle that differently. Why Thomas was alone, whether he was emotionally distraught, just want to be by himself, or he just said, well, I'm done with this movement. Obviously, Jesus is dead, so we're finished. I don't know the answers to that, but I know he wasn't there, right? He missed a pretty important thing not being there. he missed the first appearance of Jesus to his disciples. And sometimes when we miss assembly, it might be that very lesson we needed to hear. We might miss that word of encouragement we really needed from somebody. And so just a lesson on, hey, be here. You never know what you're going to miss. Be here. What does Thomas say when the other disciples tell him, we've seen the Lord? Yeah, he thinks the same of them that they thought of the women. Like, that's crazy. You're going to have to show me some evidence, right? And that's kind of what we're trying to get across, really just with this lesson, very basically, is that Jesus is willing to show us evidence. And it's okay to demand evidence, to want evidence. None of these people believe in Jesus and his resurrection without evidence. Nobody expects somebody to believe in Jesus without that. The world out there thinks you guys just have blind faith. No, no, no. You know, this is a reasoned faith. This is a faith that has examined the evidence before we came to a conclusion. Just like the disciples did here, we've got to come to that same conclusion based on evidence. So Jesus shows him, right? Here, you want to see it? Here it is. So Jesus shows him. This is from McGarvey's Fourfold Gospel. The apostles had undoubtedly seen and talked with someone. The question was who? They said that it was Jesus. Thomas, holding this to be impossible, thought it must have been someone else who they mistook for Jesus. But he would not be deceived. He would thoroughly examine the wounds, for these would identify Jesus beyond all doubt. It should be said in Thomas's favor that if his doubts were heaviest, his confession of faith was the foolest. He had more doubts as to the resurrection because it meant more to him, and it meant that Jesus was none other than God himself. He says, my Lord and my God. So the evidence changes the mind of Thomas, right? What does Jesus say about those who can't physically view the evidence today? Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. That doesn't mean we're believing without evidence though, right? We still have evidence. It's here in our scriptures. It's from the eyewitness testimony, and that's why those who wrote the New Testament, it was required that they be eyewitnesses, because that is valid evidence. It's valid evidence in a court of law today if you have eyewitness testimony, and it should be valid for us when we have multiple eyewitnesses who have wrote down these events so that we could have and use their evidence for our convictions. None of these people believe without evidence. This will be my last quote because I'm out of time. The resurrection made the difference between the skepticism of despair and the worship which brings certainty. And so belief in a risen Christ made a mourner into a missionary, a penitent into a preacher, the bereaved friend into an apostle of love, a timid and shrinking coterie of disciples into the fearless heralds of a new movement, and a doubter into a confessor. With the confession of Thomas, John reached the high peak of belief. Faith can rise no higher than when it avows Jesus of Nazareth to be its Lord and its God. And so, what a change can occur in the hearts and minds of men when we take the time to show them the evidence. That's all that we got time for today. John chapter 21 next week. Thank you.